This is Behind the Docs, the show that shines a spotlight on the people shaping how we understand and use technology. In each episode, we pull back the curtain to talk about what it's really like to create the docs we all rely on. Let's dive in.
Hi, welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited. Today we have Kimberly Voltaire here from Simplify. And we know each other from a help site assessment I did for the team a little while ago, but we've kept in touch since then. And I'm really excited to have you here. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Ren. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah. So getting right into it, tell me how you came to be who you are in the technical writing world.
Sure. I started off earning my degree as like an English professor. And when I decided I didn't want to teach, I gave in to the pressure of, well, if you don't want to teach or go into journalism, what are you going to do? And I spoke to one of the counselors at ASU, and she was like, well, I think you'd fit really good in our technical communications degree. So I tried it out, not really knowing a whole lot of what I was getting into. And I loved it. I loved all the UX courses that they had us do. And I really enjoyed the technical editing and the technical writing. And when I graduated, I actually didn't know which side I wanted to go to, whether I wanted to pursue technical editing or learn more about UX. And I ended up getting offered my job at Simplify about a month after I graduated. So I didn't have to sit there and think about it too long. And yeah, now here I am and I love it.
That's wild. I cannot tell you how many conversations I have had at this point that people discover technical writing based on a recommendation in college and then started working at the current company they're working at right out of college. Like, it just seems like that's such a common thing. Tell me a little bit about how long you've been at Simplify and what your day-to-day looks like.
Okay, sure. I've been at Simplify about 3.5 years, and my day-to-day looks something like getting in, reviewing emails, seeing if I have anything to edit from our technical communicators. Usually when I do, it's all at the same time. They're all tying up projects, one right after the other. So those days we'll have a lot of heavy review going on and reaching out to them and discussing what's in their documentation. And other times I'm working on other projects. I own the style guide for our technical communications team. So I'm always going through it and trying to improve it and making sure it's relevant to our documentation and our audience. And I also try to keep up with UX things. I like to take courses on Udemy. Right now I'm trying to learn Figma, and it's a lot of, you know, back and forth with that kind of stuff. I also try and reach out with people from like our business development team. I've reviewed some of their documentation before, and, you know, I try and keep busy like that. It's a lot. I have a lot to review all the time. So if I'm not doing that, it's help center stuff, style guide stuff, researching things for our company, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot day to day. Tell me a little bit about what people misunderstand about your job or your work.
When I tell people that I'm a technical editor, it can go several ways. Usually it's like, what is that? Oh, so you write documentation, and I have to be like, no, I edit the documentation. It's a completely different thing. And even on LinkedIn or just Googling, when you try to type in technical editor or technical communications editor, it just comes up with all sorts of writing things, and it will start to come up with UX. And there's so many different hats involved that, yes, I edit, but I think that's one thing that a lot of people misunderstand about not just my role, but our role in the industry is how many different things we do. It isn't just one thing. It's all sorts. Of course, I do technical writing as part of my job because of my style guide. I will help our technical communicators. I also do UX stuff. I also try to do, you know, content strategy and project management, that kind of thing. There's so much. And It's so misunderstood how much we do, how overloaded we are with responsibilities, and it can get really difficult trying to get that across to someone.
Yeah, we hear often that, especially even within like their own companies, people have a really hard time communicating the value of what they do. Have you ever been able to successfully communicate that to not even just someone in your company, but someone outside of it? Like when you talk to someone and they get how valuable what you do is, what are the things that you typically will say to them to get them there?
You know, to be honest, I don't know if I've ever really been able to convince somebody outside of the company that how valuable it is. Inside of the company, I do think they realize because they're used to communicating with us and they're used to coming to us with problems and ideas, and we can go, oh, we can help with that. And they go, really? Yes, that's part of our job. Yeah.
Do you often find yourself working cross-departmentally? Like, do you work with a large swath of the organization?
I would say that our technical communicators do. I do get included in meetings and things like that, and people do reach out to me for Grammarly questions, style guide questions, things like that. And I love discussing that type of stuff with people. I do wish I was more involved with the devs and the engineers and things like that. I would say our UX team is probably my closest collaboration point outside of technical communications. But it's, yeah, I would say that's more so the role of our technical writers, our technical communicators.
Yeah, in a dream environment, how would you interact with other people in the company?
I would like to work and interact more with our business development team because of their ad policy and compliance documentation. I've previously helped them with reviewing it, not just for style guide consistency, but also restructuring and fact checking to ensure it's in the best state possible for our users. I've seen their space where they house their docs, and they have a ton of content I'd love to review. Even though business development is separate from technical communications and our documentation lives in separate spaces, we collaborate with them to ensure that what we have in our help center is accurate. So for me, interacting with them more and reviewing more of their documentation would enhance my ability to understand if our technical documentation is correct or needs more information. I'd also love to interact more with our marketing team. Our core objectives differ in that marketing aims to persuade and sell, while technical communication focuses on instruction and user understanding. But I think our teams would greatly benefit from more collaboration. A lot of companies are hurting for marketing content writers who can talk tech on paper, which means we often need to sell the product as well as explain it in our writing, mostly when our end users are consumers. I believe we as an industry need to create a name and space for marketing-based technical writers, combining consumer or customer-centric marketing with user-centric technical communications. Someone who knows how to bring in new customers and inform and educate our existing users. So, in a dream environment, this means collaboration between technical communications and marketing. I think the two should be kept separate, but we influence each other so heavily that we need a better touch point between our departments.
What's your favorite part of your job?
That's a really hard question because I love what I do and enjoy so many aspects of my job. So it isn't just one specific thing. It aligns with my strengths as a technical editor, and I'm luckily in a place that supports me in expanding on and developing not only those strengths, but my other interests too. There's no shortage of growth opportunities, and our workplace culture and environment have significantly and positively impacted my job satisfaction. The people I work with make a huge difference, not only in my day-to-day, but also in my overall experience within my company. Having strong, positive relationships with coworkers has a direct link to enjoying our work and what we do. And overall, I really enjoy interacting with my coworkers, not just my immediate team, but cross-departmentally. And I feel like most people have experiences working at a place where they feel undervalued, overworked, constantly burnt out, questioning if what they do makes a difference. And so they dread having to go in every day and feel miserable. So working at a place that is the opposite of all of those things has been really great. It makes me love my job. My favorite responsibility at my job, though, is definitely the style guide. I just started holding meetings to discuss it and go through it with our technical communicators, so I love talking about it.
Yeah, well, let's talk more about it. So tell me, was this something that was already in place when you got there? And if not, how did you develop it? Or if it was in place, how have you changed it since then?
Right, that's a good question. So when I got hired, one of the things they told me in my panel interview was we don't have a style guide. We've never had one, and we really need one. Our documentation team, the technical communications team is new, and that's the very first thing we want you to work on. And so I developed that, and I had, I think it was maybe 2 or 3 weeks between when I accepted my job and when I actually started. And during that time, I tried to get as much done as I could. I was so excited about it, and I wanted to give them something right when I came in, like the first day, like, I have it. And I think I developed a lot of it, but I did a lot of researching. I looked at the Google Developer Style Guide. I looked at the Microsoft Style Guide. I looked at as many of the big tech companies as I could. And then when I actually got started, I read through their documentation and I had a lot of discussions with them to make sure that it was more focused on what our team was actually doing and trying to tailor that. And I mean, I would say on an average day, I probably look through my style guide like once or twice just to make sure, like, okay, this is relevant and I can add an example here from this person's documentation and that sort of thing. So it's my baby.
I love that it's a living, breathing document. I think so many people create a style guide and they like set it and forget it. So the fact that you're constantly updating it and using examples is so fun and so necessary. Is there anything that surprised you about putting together a style guide, or maybe the you were talking about how you've applied specifics from the team? Is there anything that's come up that you did not expect when putting together the style guide?
I think there are plenty of things. Honestly, a lot of it has to do with verbiage. And we actually had a conversation just yesterday with our team of like, when we talk about checkboxes, what action do we want to use? Because Microsoft uses select and clear, but we use set. And some of our clients are coming up to us and saying, that's kind of odd. And so it's things like that. And it's serving an ad to somebody versus delivering an ad, things like that. So those were very surprising. And of course, industry terms for programmatic advertising, I have to include those. And when I first got started, a lot of that was a bit overwhelming. And now it's become very second nature. And now I know enough about it to think, okay, I think we could probably use a different term here because our typical users might not understand. Our developers might, and we might, but we have to figure out who this is going to. And so I also include examples in our style guide of client facing versus internal only. And that was something that's probably the most surprising thing is how often I have to keep up with that because it's so important. Your audience is so important. It might even be the most important thing. So I think that's my answer.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. One thing I always like to ask people, especially in this industry, is was there ever an aha moment for you where you realized like documentation really matters? And what was it?
Oh my gosh, I feel like it was a culmination of experiences growing up where, you get something in the mail and you're so excited and you got to put it together and you have to read the instructions and you're like, I don't know what I'm looking at. What does this mean? I don't understand. I could write this better. And then I was the person that went and tried to write it better after, tinkering with it and doing it. And I feel like a lot of those moments were like, wow, documentation really matters. How you deliver something to your audience really matters. And I feel like that really developed after I got hired here and started working in the space, because then you can see how it impacts your users and you get to read through, your own documentation and your team's documentation and see how it actually goes with the product.
I think people, the one thing I hear the most in these conversations, or something I hear very often, is that making the connection between the documentation and the actual users on the end. You can write a procedure and send it off and call it done, but really putting yourself in the shoes of the person who's going to be reading it and knowing that that's going to actually help them eventually, I think that's a huge piece that people forget sometimes when they're in the weeds.
It's true, right? And we have a client success department that is the one that interacts with our clients, and we love getting feedback from them of just, hey, this article, it's not making sense as much as we think it could. Can we adjust this? Can we, And I think that's really important too, being open to that feedback and being open and flexible to change and want to improve for the sake of the users, because that's who it's all about.
Yeah. So I mentioned when we first started that you and I met through a help site assessment. And because we haven't gotten to catch up a little bit since that, I'm curious, what were some of the, were there any surprises? Was there anything that came of that the team was really energized by?
They were energized by the whole thing. It sparked so much discussion. And it gave us a lot of really good direction. So thank you for that. We are very grateful for sure. And I think the most surprising thing that came from it for me was when you talked about public-facing documentation and how important that is. And honestly, I never really thought too hard about it. I know I go and I look at other people's help centers, but I never. It just never crossed my mind for some reason that, oh, this must be public facing because I can just click in and access it and click through. And the other part was, wow, we're actually discussing how we can make that happen for some of our documentation. At first, it was like, I don't know if we can do this. And now it's, hey, we need to go through and actually decide, like, what do we want to be public facing? How are we going to do that? And for me, I think that's the most surprising part. And it's just been really exciting. Your feedback was very thorough. And we've even kind of joked, like, do we want to apply for the Cody Awards? Like, and it's just become so much fun. And I know it's going to be a work in progress because we want to redesign our help center templates and the whole look and everything like that. But I think when we're done, I'll get back with you and maybe I'll have you reassess it again and and see how it goes.
Yeah, I would love that. I haven't done a reassessment yet, but that would make my day. I'm really glad that the team, that was really surprising to me that that was the big thing that the team took away, because knowing the conversation we had, I understood 100% why y'all weren't public facing, but the fact that you walked away and said, maybe we should be, that was super, super exciting for us. The whole team on our side talked about it for days. So I hope you know that we also had a lot of conversations about it.
That's fun. Yeah, it's been awesome. And I think a lot of the things that you, maybe not a lot, but a good amount of the things that you brought up too were things that we had already discussed, like maybe having a chat bot in our help center somewhere or, things like that. And they had just been placed on the back burner. And it's honestly just re-energized our entire project and our interest in it. And that's been really fun. I'm looking forward to what it looks like when it's all done.
Me too, me too. All right, cool. So switching gears a little bit, what does some of my like industry insight questions I always like to ask, or what does great documentation look like to you?
Ooh, I feel like this is very double-sided because on one hand, it's accurate, clear, concise, to the point. But on the other hand, is it something that makes the user walk away feeling like they found their answer and feeling like they found their answer quickly? Because I don't want them to have to slog through long blocks of text and be like, wait, what? Like, have to get a piece of paper and read line by line just to make sure they're getting everything. So it has to be accessible. It has to be visible. The answer has to be visible is what I mean. So I would say that's what great documentation means to me.
Awesome. Is there a documentation hill that you're willing to die on?
I don't know about Documentation Hill, but I will absolutely die on the hill with the Oxford commas. I love them. I will put them everywhere. I will advocate for them every time, forever. And it bothers me when I see documentation and places that don't use them. Even when I sit down at a restaurant and I see the menu and I'm like, oh, they're not using Oxford commas. This bothers me.
I absolutely understand that one. This has been a really tough year for me personally because I am an M dash user, and so now I feel like I have to publicly claim that that M dash is mine and is not AI.
Right. I feel like that conversation came up with me and someone else too. And maybe it was in a meeting with a bunch of other people, but we talked about it. Why does that indicate AI? When did they take that from us?
I know, I know. In school I had to take a grammar, spelling, and punctuation test, and that was a big thing, was that when to properly use an M dash. And it has been a part of my writing since then. And now I feel very self-conscious when I use it, that people are just
Right.
gonna assume it's AI.
That's completely understandable. Honestly, that's why I don't make a lot of posts on LinkedIn because I feel like, is someone gonna say it's AI?
Speaking of AI, is that something that y'all are talking about often in your teams? Like, is that a thing that y'all are incorporating? If so, how? What does that look like for you?
We do incorporate it. And we have discussed how it's an unofficial part of our roles as technical communicators to research and test AI tools and determine if it's something we can use, not just for our team, but for our company. I know plenty of other people in other departments do this as well. And our company even held an AI contest last year, so that was pretty fun. Simplify uses more advanced AI tools to streamline and optimize what we do, which is programmatic advertising. And Simplify's approach is centered on making programmatic advertising highly effective and easy to use through full cycle AI support from planning and creatives to optimization and reporting. It empowers clients to achieve better results with less manual effort. And full cycle AI support, meaning we don't just use it for one part of the process, we use it for strategy and planning, for data preparation, for model development, for integration and deployment, for monitoring and maintenance, so many things. We use every stage of the AI life cycle. It's one of the things that places us above and ahead of the rest. On a smaller level, my team uses Grammarly a lot, which has a ton of writing assistance features, not just grammar checking, but tone analysis, which you can adjust, which is really cool. And I put our style guide in there, which helps fine-tune its detection and suggestions. So I feel like I can help make it tailor-made to my team and what we do. And I think Grammarly used to be fairly narrow when it came to AI tools, but now it has generative AI and uses like an advanced AI humanizer, which rewrites its own AI generated text to make it seem more human. So it's really weird. And I love the Zoom AI companion because it keeps meeting notes and I can be forgetful sometimes. I know I mentioned earlier that we are wanting to develop a chatbot for our help center because things like that provide 24/7 user support. A big one I frequently use is Perplexity AI because I do a lot of research and it's become a favorite of mine because of its active web searching and citation of sources for its answers. So I feel like it's a superior tool for research, factual accuracy, and checking up-to-date information. I think it's really important to learn and understand how to use AI for productivity. I don't think it's going to replace us, and I guess that's another hill I will die on. AI requires so much human oversight, and I feel like at this point, we've all seen some pretty interesting examples of AI hallucinations and outright false information. AI is not the answer. It's never the answer. It's just the tool to help us out.
Yeah, I just saw on LinkedIn a lot of people in our industry talking about how even OpenAI was hiring content designers and things like that because they need it too. Even the best of the best need people who are overseeing humans that are overseeing the content because I don't think AI will ever get it totally
I don't think so either. And I think that's great.
right. Yeah. Cool. Well, I mean, gosh, just I could sit here and talk all day, truly. But I know that you have things to do and the team is doing really fun stuff. So I want to help you get back to that. But I wanted to, we always ended on our last question, which is what advice would you give someone who is just starting out in this field or maybe interested in it?
Ooh. If for someone interested in technical writing or technical editing, a lot of people think it's the same thing. Honestly, I would say sit down and try and record yourself either over Zoom or something and talk yourself through whatever you're doing for 30 minutes. I do that all the time and I did it in school and it really helps while you're doing it to talk through your process because then you realize, hey, I can do this better. And then when you go back and watch it, you get even more ideas and it really helps practice and get the hang of it and become comfortable with doing things. And that and just documenting whatever you're doing, whether you have a hobby or very niche interest, just open a Google Doc and try and act like you're trying to teach somebody about it. That's the best way, I think.
That is a really good piece of advice. I have not heard that yet, but I think I might even use that one.
It's great. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, I have enjoyed our conversation so much. I was really glad to be able to get to connect after our help site assessment, and I appreciate you coming on and giving us your insight.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you, Ren. Anytime. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Docs, where the content's structured, but the conversations aren't. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and share it with someone who loves great documentation as much as we do. Until next time, keep creating content that makes a difference.